Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
We are at the interview part of the show, and today we have a special guest that has written a book that caught my fancy, and the book is called Murder and Mayhem, and it's an annotated bibliography of gay and queer males in America, or in mystery, 1908 to 2018, and the author is Matt Lubbers-Moore. Thank you for taking the time.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, let's first of all, it's the first time you've been on the show, so let's talk about who you are and how you got into this writing of a book like this. So what's kind of your history here?
Well, I've always been kind of a huge fan of mysteries. You know, going back to Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys and Boxcar Children. And as I got older, the books really didn't appeal to me much. You know, they, you know, as a gay man, I didn't relate to the characters as much as I, you know, did as I was younger. So I started to try, you know, I started finding books that actually had gay detectives and gay characters and mysteries, and those books started to appeal to me a lot more. And so as I really delved into reading them and then, you know, of course, collecting them, I started to create a database of them, and I'm also a co-moderator of a Facebook group that's all about gay mysteries and suspenses and horrors, thrillers, and we were interviewing a another bibliographer who is much more esteemed than I am, who passed away not too long ago, Drury Wayne Gunn. And he had mentioned that, you know, with today's technology, you know, it'd be so easy to create a database, you know, that's open to anyone, that's available to everyone. And so I thought, well, I already kind of started a database, so I might as well just start finishing the you know, I might as well keep working on the database. So that's how I got started on the bibliography.
Wow. That's so you must have an interest in a lot of history and stuff. So what made you, what, that's not the right way, where you began in what year of going back and putting together these stories? So, and how did you determine where you were going to go back to?
Well, I started really doing it in 2014, compiling the databases after the interview with Drew Wayne God. And so what I did was I used his bibliography. I used another couple of bibliographies that I found about gay detectives. And I went back as far as I could go, and 1909 was the earliest I could find a gay character in a mystery, and it was by Arthur Conan Doyle, who of course wrote Sherlock Holmes. The short story is not one of the Sherlock Holmes stories, although a London detective is mentioned but is not named. But it's the short story, and of course the short story, you know, was published in 1909. It's called The Man with the Watches, and the great thing is that it's there's no copyright on it any longer because it's so old. So I was actually able to include it in the bibliography at the very end.
So what are you hoping for when you take on a book like this? This is a lot of work and a big project. What are you hoping people get out of it?
So hopefully I sell one copy. That's all I really hope.
There's ambition for you.
Completely justified if I sell one copy. I've actually sold quite a few copies, so I feel very justified in writing it. But, I mean, the main thing for the book is, you know, so many resources can use it. It's not just, you know, I mean, it's a collection of titles and authors and things. And, you know, if someone like me who's a collector, you know, I can use it to finish my collection, to really get it even more in depth. Or, you know, I include a rating in the book, you know, 1 through 3. For how involved a gay character is in the book. And if it's a three out of three, the detective is gay. You know, if it's a 2, you know, the main character is not gay, but their best friend is, who helps them solve the mystery, or is very involved in the crime. And a 1 out of 3 just means that there was a gay person somewhere in the book, either positively or negatively. And so what some people can do, if you're a collector like me, you can say, well, I only want to collect books in which the detective is gay. And so you only collect the books that are 3 out of 3s. Or you go, well, or you're like me, and you go, I need to collect everything. And so you have to buy every single book in that I list. But other than collectors, you know, libraries can use it because, you know, if they want to fill in their collections, or if they have members of their student body or faculty that would like it, they're able to be able to use it. I know there's a couple bookstores that have bought the book to help them with their listing of books. They're more upscale, rare, antiquarian bookstores, and it helps them with their listings and things. But I mean, it's real. And even for I was talking to someone on Facebook, and they bought it because they love books and they like gay characters, and they thought, well, you know, I'll just be able to read through it and see if there's any books that I want to buy out of it. So it really is available to anyone that wants to know more about kind of the, you know, gay people and detective stories. But the other cool thing about writing this book, and I didn't even think about it until I was kind of in the middle of it, was that, you know, it's from 1909 to 2018, and you can kind of almost see the history of the acceptance of gay people in the world through the detective story. Unfortunately, you know, Arthur Conan Doyle, his short story was actually very positive. The gay men in the short story are criminals, but he represents the love that they have for each other as a very positive and welcoming and open thing, which I was not expecting. I was kind of expecting like it was going to be like horrible and he was going to trash them and really depict, you know, homosexuals as deviants and perverts. But you can kind of almost see, you know, like Agatha Christie's meant, you know, in the book, and she, you know, and her, the gay character she uses, you know, they're the quiet neighbor down the street, you know, or some other authors might use a gay character who lives upstairs. They're the quiet studious, they own an antique store, or they're a barber, or, you know, they're some sort of gay cliche. But slowly, as you get into the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, all of a sudden there's gay detectives and they're the main characters and they're not a stereotype and they're positive. And, you know, that slowly moves into, you know, the 70s and 80s and 90s and 2000s where, you know, gay characters are everywhere and they are in every profession and they aren't just relegated to just, you know, one archetype, in the detective world. So I like it because you can also not only read it to see what books you might like, but you can also read it as a history story of the acceptance of gay people in America.
Matt, I think this is amazing. I think it's so difficult for any person, regardless of your sexuality or preferences, it makes no difference. It's already hard enough in today's day and age to go out there and find something that you are absolutely affiliated to on the shelf, because we live in this virtual, this electronic world. So to walk in and find something that you really enjoy reading is difficult enough.
Yeah.
Let alone when you can't actually relate to the characters. And I see that not only in sexual preference or gender identity, but also in disability, for example. If you can't relate to the people that are in the book in the same way, then the book becomes meaningless. So, you know, a brilliant way of bringing everything together and adding that review to it and helping people to make their own informed decisions about what they might be more interested in terms of reading. Have you, in terms of, you know, just the sheer volume of text out there to research and put into your book must have been incredible. How did you filter it down and decide what you wanted to put in your book?
You know, that was very, very difficult because there's so much. And, you know, when I was using the bibliography from Drury Wayne Gunn, he only used books that had gay detectives. And they had to be public. They had to be in print. They had to be available for purchase and things like that. I had a really hard time because I didn't want to exclude anything. So the most obscure thing, you know, there's a couple books in here that I put, you know, I at the end of each blurb, I put, sometimes I'll add something about the book on my own, and I'll say, this book is no longer available. I can't find it anywhere. It was an ebook. It's no longer available. And the thing about that is, you know, like authors can bring things out, they can take things away, you know, with the electronic world as it is with ebooks, they're here one day and gone the next, or they can be heavily edited easily. And so a lot of authors, you know, I was talking to Otto Penzler, who runs Mysterious Books Shop in New York. Who has written a ton of bibliographies as well about different things. And he's not doing bibliographies anymore because he's like, you know, there's so many ebooks out there that aren't being put out in print. So how do you account for them? So I kind of have my own system of doing it. I put them in there and I make sure I state that they are an ebook only, so that people, if they're looking for it, they may not be able to find it, you know, because it might not be available anymore. The blurb that I include in the book might have changed drastically by the time they actually get the book. But I didn't want to exclude anything. So I included as many ebooks as I could find. I included as many weird off-the-cuff things that I had a hard time categorizing. You know, it kind of was a mystery, but I'm not 100% sure it was a mystery. But I don't want to exclude it because there might be someone out there that does want to find that book. And so it was very difficult in that. The other hard part is there is so many mystery novels out there. I mean, books are being published. Millions of books are being out, you know, being published, you know, all the time. And so it's really difficult to read them all. So I have a great support team. There's a librarian down in Australia, Graham Cheater, who was an incredible help to me. There's a guy in Finland named Pekka. He found hundreds of books for me, just expedited the time I could actually publish this by probably years, because he just delved into Twitter and into publishers' websites and just found tons of authors. Now, the thing was, the minute I published it, of course, then I found hundreds more. You know, Louise Penny is not in the book, and yet in every single one of her books, there's a gay couple. So I completely missed her. So, you know, I'm having to go back through and re-edit and come up with, you know, a new edition that'll probably come out in 4 to 5 years. Yeah, I didn't want to exclude anything. You know, that's why I also did gay and queer males, because I didn't want to leave out, like, transgender. I didn't want to leave out bisexual men, you know, because we're already such a fragmented world. I didn't want to exclude even more.
No, absolutely. And how do you... So going forward, just thinking this through, now we're able to identify with many different forms of gender identity. So you've more over 100 different gender identities out there. So how do you propose to do that going forward? Is that something you've considered? Does it overcomplicate something that doesn't need to be overcomplicated?
What I figure is going forward is that however the author describes the character is how I'll describe the character in the book.
Yeah. Because it is, we're just developing all the time, aren't we? And we're becoming more understanding and accepting of how we feel as an individual and individualizing everything, which is brilliant. And it's absolutely how it should be. Mm-hmm. But to bring that into your bibliography would be a real challenge. So it's good to hear that you've got this and are sort of kind of already thinking about what your second edition might look like. Yeah, so can I ask you something a little bit personal, Matt, if you don't mind? It's not too personal, actually. No. But it's just you referenced earlier, you were talking about how you suddenly realised that you weren't relating to characters in books the same way as you used to as a child. So what sort of age did you really start to understand your own sexuality and think, that's not where I want to be. I don't want to be brought up and enveloped with this one stereotype of who I should be, and actually that's not who I am.
Well, I was very fortunate as a young man. My parents were, I can't say liberal. I mean, they were more free thinking and more open. So I came to realize that I was different from my peers about 9 years old. I came out to myself you know, as gay when I was 12. I came out to friends when I was about, you know, I came out to friends and family about 16. And then I had a brief homophobic friend reaction when I was 17-ish, which pushed me slightly back into the closet. And so I dated a woman who ended up becoming a really good friend. But on my 19th birthday, I fully embraced my being gay, and I have not looked back since. But I was very fortunate that, you know, when I came out to my parents, you know, they, you know, my mom said, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, I love you no matter what. You know, when my dad found out, you know, which was pretty much the same night, but then, you know, he talked to me later about it, you know, he said the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I was very fortunate as a young man, you know, I know not a lot of people have the kind of, you know, experiences that I did.
And so it's horrifying, isn't it? The stories that you hear about young people who are so scared of losing something. A friend of mine's son came out to me, and I said, well, why are you talking to me about this? And he said, I'm really worried. He said that my parents may not respond in the way that I want them to. And I said, you know, I've known your parents a very long time and they already know. and he smiled and he laughed. And then he obviously went and had the conversation. And I kind of pre-warned them. I said, there's a conversation coming your way that you already know about.
Yes.
And I said, he just needs your love right now. And they were brilliant, absolutely brilliant, as I knew they would be. But that innate fear as a teen, when you're already going through so many hormonal changes and you've kind of battled with all of those feelings and come through it and made your kind of your decisions, and then for somebody to reject you for that is just, you know, it's unthinkable. And yet it happens so often.
Yes, unfortunately it happens too often.
Absolutely. And, you know, I work with young people and I see that a lot, and it's incredibly sad. And my own son actually identifies transgender. And, I will share this with everybody on the radio. I'm sure he won't mind. It was very funny. And he said, we were in a van and we'd been traveling for some time and delivering furniture actually. And he said, oh, I've got something to say. And I said, okay, it's about 11 o'clock at night. I was very tired. He said, I've got something to say. I said, okay. And he said, I might be gay. I said, all right, okay, is there anything else? He said, oh, okay, is that okay? I said, it really doesn't make any difference to me. He said, oh, I need to say something else. And I said, okay, I might be trans. I said, oh, okay, that's fine. I said, is anything else? He went, no, I think we're done. And it was as simple as that. And you know, I can't imagine how that would have felt to him had I had said or reacted in any other way. You know, total for me, he is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And when he wants to be who she is, then he will make that decision and that change. And I think it's fantastic that he has the opportunity to do that. So I think it's a fantastic opportunity for when people are really struggling and they're trying to understand how to relate to people, to know where to go to read something that is not educational particularly, but it helps them to identify with different people and how people feel about things and how people respond to situations. It's got to be a good thing from an education point of view in terms of sexuality, as well as the historical evolution of human rights. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, I completely agree, yes.
I think it's your book too, you're thinking of doing it in a few years' time when you've got obviously further texts to put in that, so from 2018 to a 2023 kind of range. Mm-hmm. Where are you now in that?
Well, unfortunately, last in March I had acute pancreatitis. So I have been pretty much bedridden for the last 2 months. So right now I have an incredibly amount of time on my hands because all of my jobs. I work at a library, I work at a bookstore, I work at a comic book store. All three of them are closed by the state of Michigan. And so I have all this time on my hand to work on the book, and that's what I planned on. And then all of a sudden I got pancreatitis and I was bedridden. So sitting for any amounts of time is incredibly painful for me right now.
Mm.
So unfortunately, I have not gotten as far as I would like to have gotten at this point. I keep getting emails and messages from the people who have been helping me. So at least I have something to fall back on when I start to include them again. And anything I missed. So like the Louise Penny books, I already have them in the database. So once I get putting the books from the database into the annotated bibliography, I will be that much further ahead. But unfortunately, this year has not been very fruitful as much as I would have liked to have been.
Sad.
I was going to ask in this book here, is there a story or two that really had an effect on you that stays with you now to this day that you hadn't been aware of before?
The greatest, in my opinion, book written in the gay mystery genre is called Fade Out by Joseph Hansen. And he's kind of seen as there's always the fathers of this and that. I have my own hierarchy for the gay mysteries genre. I consider him to be the grandfather, the godfather, essentially, of gay mysteries. Without him, who knows how long it would have taken for gay mysteries to really take.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Off. But Fade Out is an incredibly beautiful book. The main character, in today's world, he probably would not be he would be viewed kind of as a toxic masculinity character. He didn't like effeminate gay men. He was very rough and tumble, and he didn't speak much, and he smoked 10 packs a day. And this book was published in 1970. But he just lost his lover, who was actually a very effeminate gay man, who was a interior designer. And the main character is finally up after being bedridden for 6 months. Because he just couldn't imagine life without his lover. And I think it's like the third or fourth chapter in where he starts kind of thinking about how he met him. And there's this wonder, and it's so beautiful about how they met and how, they made their lives together. And it was such a beautiful story. In the middle of a detective story, the main character's name is Dave Branstetter, and he works for an insurance company as a death claims investigator. But without Joseph Hansen, who knows how long it might have taken for authors like Michael Nava and Richard Stevenson or John Morgan Wilson to really come out and shine. Or even be published by mainstream publishers. Up to Joseph Hansen, there was no mainstream publishers publishing, gay detectives. You had George Baxt, who published the Feral Love books, but they were seen more as campy and pulp. So when you got to Joseph Hansen, all of a sudden it was okay for mainstream publishers to publish gay authors publishing about gay main characters who aren't stereotypes and who don't always die at the end.
Do you see that as a problem still today with gay stories or books or anything like that being published today with mainstream publishers, or is it more acceptable?
Well, unfortunately, in the 90s, publishers got very afraid. They saw the Defense of Marriage Act, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Vermont and Hawaii were trying to push, gay marriage, and the people of their states were very opposed. And so all of a sudden you see these mainstream public, they're very conservative. They're looking at their pocketbooks, and they don't want anything to affect, their profit margins, heaven forbid. So all of a sudden in the 90s, they saw all of this backlash against gay culture and gay people. And they went, no, we can't publish gay authors anymore. And all of a sudden you had, Richard Stevenson and all these other authors who really had a successful runs with their books, 10, 15 mysteries with these mainstream publishers, and they did fairly well, who all of a sudden went, yeah, we're not renewing your contract. There's no market for it, even though there had been a market all this time, and there still would have been if they would have kept publishing. And I think it's been very hard for gay authors to publish with mainstream publishers. But I'm hopeful, but I know a lot of gay authors I talk to are not. You have James Patterson, who published a gay detective. You had Anne Cleves, who just won, I want to say an Edgar, but I think it might have been an Agatha Christie Award for her book, which had a gay detective. So you're starting to see straight authors publish detective stories with gay main characters. So I'm hopeful that eventually mainstream publishers will say, oh, well, these straight authors are having such a success. Let's see how maybe gay authors will do. But, you know, again, with, there's so many small independent publishers. There's self-publishing, which is so easy, on Amazon. You write something, you can put it out on Amazon. No fuss, no need for editors or anything like that. But you have some great authors out there who are self-publishing their books because they don't have any access to the publishing world. I mean, Marshall Thornton has won 3 Lambda Awards for Best Gay Mysteries. He self-publishes. So you're seeing that a lot more where, are the mainstream publishers really that necessary for gay authors? But again, you're missing the promotion. You're missing the support of all this. So it can be, there's pros and cons, of getting mainstream publishers to publish your books. Are they really necessary or not and stuff? I'm hoping that eventually mainstream publishers will start to publish gay authors again, but at this point, they're just not.
And it does make a difference, because they get printed and put in bookstores and they get on a front shelf when someone walks in and they see it. That's kind of the advantage of it.
Yes.
Is this sort of why you are doing Requeered Tales original publication? So are you're kind of starting publishing yourself as well?
Well, we don't do original publications. We only do reprints. We only republish books. What we do is at Requeered Tales is we find authors and titles that we think have historical merit, and we think these books should never have gone out of print in the first place, and they should be brought back out. And it's the same thing with my book about, you can trace the history of, gay characters, and gay people in American life through literature. And, and when you read, like a book by Grant Michaels, who, he was a stereotypical hairstylist who was a went off and did all this detective work and solved crimes but he was also butch. I don't recall any fist fights he would get into, but he stood up to killers. He stood up to people and said, this is who I am. And, he was publishing, in the 80s and early 90s. And, that's, for a character like that, to be around is just amazing. The other thing, Neil Plaxey and I were talking about this, and I think he actually wrote it in one of the introductions to one of his books, was that this was kind of the first character to work with the police department. He was a stereotypical gay man who actually got along and worked with the police department in a time where police departments did not want to work with gay people, especially, in that kind of a closed capacity, assume to let them do their job. The first book that we published was a horror novel called Steam, by J.B. Laws. And, he was an unpublished author. And Allison Press and a bookstore in San Francisco, I can't remember which one, had a competition for the best new author. And so what they would do is, the employees of this bookstore would read all the manuscripts, and whoever had the best manuscript would then be published by Allison Press. And Steam is amazing. I mean, it was being referred to as, you know, J.B. Laws was being referred to as the gay Stephen King. You know, the book, I mean, I can't read horror novels because of my overactive imagination, you know, but of course I had to read it to, you know, make sure that, you know, it was edited and proofread and all that kind of fun stuff. So I read it, and I couldn't even go into my bathroom at night for like 2 weeks because it was so terrifying. You know, and he died, you know, just a couple years after the book came out, and just before his second book came out. And, you know, we lost so many voices to AIDS. You know, so many young people that they really had so much talent and so much promise, and then we lost them. You know, and I'm not just talking about authors, but artists and musicians, and, you know, just, you know, I just think of like how rich our world would really be right now if all those young men had not died. And, you know, so for us, it's not just, you know, going, ooh, these are really good books and people should still be reading them. But it's also to say, hey, read these books. These voices still deserve to be heard. And, you know, and so many of these authors are just so brilliant, and they are so wonderfully, the books are just so wonderfully written. And we really do want people to reread them because they are, you know, either reread them or read them for the first time, because they really are amazing. And yeah, you know, they're from the, you know, 80s and 90s, and they might be a bit dated. You know, there's no cell phones or laptops, and there's a lot of running around, you know, and having to solve crimes, you know, the old fashioned way, you know, where you actually had to talk to a person in person. But, you know, they're so good, and they deserve to be read. And so at ReQueer Tales, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to revive, we're trying to preserve the LGBT literary heritage, because it's just being lost.
Hmm. So what's next for Matt? Where do you go from here?
You know, I'm not really sure.
that was the conversation killer right there.
I don't know.
All right. Well done, Matt.
You know, I'm going to keep working, you know, on my Murder and Mayhem, and hopefully come out. You know, it came out a few days before leap year, or, you know, it came out in February of leap year. And so I thought, well, you know, it'd be kind of fun to come out every 4 years on leap year. So that means that I have a lot of work ahead of me. And so I'm hoping of getting that, doing that and keeping up with it. And then ReQueer Tales, you know, we've got so many great authors and so many great books, you know, and people can check them out at requeertales.com. I would mention going to our Facebook page, but I'm the one that updates it. And having been sick, I have not been updating it as much as I should have. But no, my two partners, Justine and Alexander, are brilliant. You know, they've been working, you know, really hard. You know, this whole COVID-19 thing's been just, you know, really put us behind. But we've got, you know, a couple big books coming out. John Morgan Wilson, he's the first gay man to write a gay main character as his detective to win an Edgar Award. We've got him coming out, and we're going to be republishing his first book in September. And I know I mentioned that we don't do original titles, but there's a couple authors that published books that were never published. They wrote books that were never published as part of their series, and we're working on bringing those out as well. So we're working, we've got a lot of balls in the air, we got a lot of stuff going on, and it's really exciting times at ReQueer Tales. So Matt, you know, I'm also working on my master's degree in history. I have a master's degree in library sciences, which is probably why I'm obsessed with bibliographies. We've got so much stuff going forward. I've got tons of stuff on my plate. So it's going to be a very busy time, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, it sounds like it. Lots of balls flying around in the air.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. What other contact information do you have? So the book can be found in Amazon, anywhere else, or do you have a website for yourself?
I do not have a website for myself. The book can be found anywhere. Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. You can request it from your local bookstores. So it can be found anywhere. And then for myself, I mean, for Requeer Tales or for myself, you know, if people want to get a hold of me with ideas, or if they have the book and they found that I didn't include an author or I missed a title or something like that, I would love for people to get a hold of me and say, hey, you missed this title, because then I can include it. And I want to be as inclusive as I can. And I want to include as much as I can. So, if people want to email me, they can email me at mattgenemore@gmail.com. That's mattgenemore @gmail.com. Or they can get a hold of me through requeertales.com. There's a contact page on there, or it's requeertales@gmail.com. And so if people also have ideas of authors or titles that shouldn't be out of print, that they would love for us to maybe look into, you know, we've got 2020 and 2021 pretty well booked solid, but you know, we're starting to fill up 2022, and we would love to hear from people if they have ideas for other titles or authors that are out of print, that they think have literary merit for the gay community, for the LGBT community, that we should look into, because we're always looking for ideas. We're always looking for authors. We're always looking for titles.
Is it a real hard process for you to get the out of print books and then get them reprinted? Like, what kind of a process is that?
Sometimes it's super, super easy, where we just contact the author and say, hey, do you want us to reprint your books? And they say yes. They're literally just send me the contract. We send them the contract and they sign it and they send it right back to us. It's fantastic. Other times it's, you know, when the author is deceased, it's tracking down the estate. A really good example is I can either do J.B. Laws or I can do Grant Michaels. I'll do Grant Michaels this time. So with Grant Michaels, we only had a physical address for a lawyer in New Jersey who had the estate. So I wrote her a physical letter asking her to put us in touch with Grant Michaels' mother, who we believed had the rights to his books. Well, so I got an email from Grant Michaels' brother, who informed us that their mother had passed away shortly after Grant Michaels did, and that he was the estate holder now. So we worked with him for about a month or two over the wording of the contract and getting everything prepared. And then the only thing that we require of estate holders is that they prove somehow is that they sign an affidavit saying that they are the estate holders, and that if it turns out that they are not, that we're not liable for damages or for copyright infringement. So he kind of freaked out a little bit when he had to sign this. And so he went back to his lawyer, and it turns out he didn't have the rights to the books. It turns out that Grant Michaels had left the rights to the books to a friend of his. So then the brother ended up putting us in touch with the friend. And so then we went through this whole process again of going over the contract and getting everything, all of the P's and Q's and crossing the I's and T's and getting all that stuff done. And when he needed to sign the paperwork saying that, you know, he was the estate holder, he freaked a little bit too, and confessed that he had donated everything to a library in Boston. And so we had to contact the library in Boston and ask them, and they were like, no, we don't have the rights, we just have the papers. So we went back and we were like, oh no, you still have the rights to the you still have the rights to the books, they just have the papers. But he wanted them to like actually like write out like, we do not have the rights to the paper, you know. He wanted them to sign what we wanted him to sign. So eventually, you know, the library did that. He signed. And so now, I think we just came out with the third Grant Michaels, Stan Krajicek books, third or fourth. So, we're really happy with that. But yeah, sometimes tracking down who has the rights can be, bothersome. It can take some time. And then there's some authors that we've reached out to. They don't want their books back in print, you know, and there's nothing we can say or do. You know, I'm from Michigan. We always joke that I'm Michigan nice. And that I can, you know, like sweet talk my way. And sometimes the authors just don't, you know, really want to, they don't want their books back in print. And, you know, Alexander's in Canada, so we always joke that he's even nicer than Michigan nice. So, you know, he goes after authors sometimes, and, you know, unfortunately, they just don't want their books back in print. They just either aren't happy with how they turned out, or they just felt like it was part of their life that's over now, and they just don't want to deal with it. You know, and I feel, you know, and it makes me kind of sad when I think, oh, but they're so good. And some of these authors that don't want their books back in print, they're Lambda Award winning authors. You know, some of them have won awards for their books, and they're like, no, we just didn't feel they were any good, or no, we just, you know, that was part of my past and I don't want it out there. And I'm like, but the literary heritage.
Well, that is sad.
Do you think maybe they had a real bad time during their publishing of it, or when it came out? Maybe it was kind of a bad time for them, or backlash on it?
Well, you know, I was just going to say, you know, and some of these authors did have, you know, homophobic reactions, and, you know, some of them, you know, might not have been out when the books came out. You know, I know, like, Richard Stevenson, you know, his real name is Richard Lipes, I think is how you pronounce his last name. But he was a teacher at a school, and he had two young children and was married when he started publishing his first gay novels. And so he changed his author name to Richard Stevenson because he didn't want, you know, his kids to be picked on, or, you know, because they're the children of that gay author. You know, so, you know, I know a lot of lesbian authors that we've reached out to, you know, they've all written, a lot of them have written under pseudonyms, you know, because they were married at the time, and, you know, they didn't want, you know, their husbands knowing they were publishing lesbian mystery novels. And so, yeah, you know, I think at that, you know, so now, of course, now that they're older and, you know, they've, you know, either come out or whatever, you know, they see that as not a great time in their lives. So I don't fault them. You know, I don't say, oh, you need to publish these books anyways. You know, who cares about your past, you know? But, you know, I completely understand where they're coming from. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's been a great conversation. And so we will have your book up on our site so people listening can just do one click and pick up the book. And I recommend it if you want some really good gay history. This is the book to go to. Our guest has been the author, the one that put it together, and that's Matt Lovers Moore. Thank you for taking the time to be on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.